Hello, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak here. So my talk is going to be a two-dimensional talk for most, if not all of the time. And if I have a bit of time at the end, I will say something about higher dimension. And it is a talk about interfaces. So here, the co-dimension is set to one. The dimension of the effect is also set to one. It's like the simplest possible setup. The setup is this one. We have a CFT on the left, a CFT on the right, and a conformal defect in the middle. I will need very little information about what a conformal defect actually is in two dimensions. Basically, the only thing I will need is how energy is reflected and transmitted off the defect, which is encoded in Cardy's gluing condition, which I will recall in a second. What is the main goal of the presentation? The main goal of the presentation is to understand what does it mean for a conformal defect to be more or less transparent. So the idea is to define reflection and transmission coefficients, which are going to tell us something about how energy bounces off a defect and comes back or goes forward. This is sort of a very basic question, and I would say probably the first question that that we could ask ourselves if we are in the presence of an interface, and if you want to study the system. And indeed, it's more or less what the first thing we learn in quantum mechanics. We have a potential barrier, and we ask what is reflection and transmission amplitudes. For conformal defects, this is, requires slightly more thought, because in general, we don't want to use, we don't like to use the word amplitude too lightly, because we do not have asymptotic states in the system to send in most of cases. We do if we have the special case of a conformal free theory. So the aim would be to define some object, some quantity which works and tells us, answers the question independently of what is the system at hand, as long as it is conformal. I would like to stress as a motivation, well, okay, of course, I will avoid to motivate too much the study of conformal defects here, except to stress again that one reason why we like conformal defects is that they are probing something more than just a conformal field theory. They're probing the way in which the light spectrum interacts with the heavy one. So in a conformal field theory, we are left in infrared with light, not really light particles, but light matter. And but sometimes we're interested in knowing how this light matter interacts with heavy degrees of freedom. The example which has been touched upon more in this workshop, I think, is the case of Wilson lines, so heavy charged particles which are left in the vacuum. But in this case, it would be more, well, of course, this is still one-dimensional, but you could also think of as the interface between two materials. So there's some heavy object, some boundary of a box in the system. So since this is an interesting physical situation, this is one motivation to study conformal defects. Another motivation is that they probe the theory. They're not just a feature, but they may tell us something also about the rest. So exactly as we probe the theory with local operators, we hit the vacuum with local operators to see what happens, we place defects in the vacuum also to probe the theory. And in particular, the question of transparency of an interface is clearly a question that probes features of the conformal field theory, because then we can ask various sorts of questions. In particular, let's now take a fixed interface between two conformal field theories, and let's send matter which has been created by different local operators, which would be equivalent to, in principle, intuitively equivalent to send against the wall different particles. So depending on how different states of the theory are reflected and transmitted off the interface, we may learn something about the theory itself, or about the way in which the theory is described by local operators, and I will try to argue that this is the case here. So, okay, so in order to get going, I think I would like to start by reviewing some basic setup, and some basic features of propagation of matter in a conformal field theory, in a two-dimensional conformal field theory. So throughout the talk, I will consider dynamics, so everything will be Lorentzian. And therefore, okay, we would like to understand if I create a state, if I create a bump of energy somewhere in time and somewhere in space, how does it propagate? In two dimensions, this is extremely simple, at least for what concerns the average energy which propagates. The reason being that the stress tensor is holomorphically split. So in any state of the theory, this equation is valid, that everybody knows and loves. And here my conventions are that z is equal to t minus x and z bar is equal to t plus x. So this equation is pretty simple, but it tells us something important. It tells us that if I create a state which at time t equals 0 has a bump somewhere, and the way to create this state is pretty simple. I just act with a local operator with a slight shift in imaginary time. This creates a normalizable state. And if you just look at the three-point function, you'll see that at t equals 0, it's some bump, where exactly where I place the operator. So this, the vertical axis, is the expectation value of the energy. The way this goes is that at some later time, there will be two bumps, possibly different, that travels away from each other. One center at x equal t and one center at x equal minus t. And of course, in the past, this is the same situation, but reversed. The two bumps are moving against each other. OK, so at the level of energy, 2D CFT is pretty boring. The matter passes through without interacting. It's completely undeformed and goes away. This is one more reason to consider interfaces, because instead interfaces can turn left movers into right movers, so it's somewhat more similar to what a scattering process should be. Okay, so then, once we understand this, we can start thinking of what happens when we send matter from, say, the left side against the interface, how the propagation will be affected by the interface. The way in which it is affected is just encoded by Cardick-Lewin conditions. Which state that sufficient and, well, necessary and sufficient condition for an interface to be conformal, so to be translational and scalar invariant, actually the rest of the Virasoro comes for free, is that So the T is the stress tensor. Every time I put a subscript, it refers to the left or the right CFT. And okay, Cardick-Lewin conditions just tell us, as everybody knows, that this is valid at the interface. So this is slightly better for us to write in a different way. Something like this. No, this. So the idea is that if I have energy that comes in from the left and from the right, the energy is just split and goes back, and it's glued. So T left is measuring, since this dependence is like this, is measuring the right movers, and T bar right is measuring the left movers. And this, the gluing conditions just tell us that nothing is absorbed by the interface. The gluing condition are just a statement. There's no stress tensor on the interface, so there's no way for the local energy to be absorbed and be contained by the defect. Energy comes in, bumps, and goes off. Of course, the amount of energy that goes towards the left and towards the right afterwards is not fixed by the gluing condition. It's a dynamical input, and it's what we would like to understand. Okay, so these are extremely simple facts and allow us to set up an experiment and try to measure how this comes about, how this process unfolds. So let me just let me say one more intuitive thing, and with it the main result, so that there's some clarity about what I'm going to prove, and then I'll go into some detail. So the experiment. So let's go to 2, say. R stands for reflection and transmission. Okay, so the experiment we would like to do is just the following. We take some bump of energy that goes towards the interface, so in some incident energy. And there will be some transmitted and some reflected energies. And we would like to measure R as what it should be, so incident energy divided by, reflected energy divided by the incident energy, and similarly for the transmission coefficient. So what's going to be the output? The output of the computation is going to be the following. The transmission coefficient is going to be a number, which I parameterize for reasons to become clear very shortly, in this way. And in particular, there is a left transmission and the right transmission, which just refer to the fact that I can create matter incoming from the left as I drew it here or from the right. So there are two different reflection and transmission coefficients. And the reflection is just to be is just going to be 1 minus transmission. And this will follow from the gluing conditions. There's no energy being retained on the defect. So some comments before going on. So this looks boring, but it shouldn't look boring. The reason is that I didn't tell you many things about what's going on. In particular, I didn't tell you which operator I'm using to create the state. And I didn't tell you, and I told you that this is a constant. This does not depend on the wave function I use to create the state, or in other words, on the momentum of the incoming state. And this is not how it works in a quantum field theory, in a generic quantum field theory, right? The transmission and reflection coefficients or amplitudes for matter going against the wall depends on which matter goes against the wall. Neutrino passes through and photons don't. And depends on the momentum. So these are the special features, so some universal features that arise from this computation, which are very special about conformal field theories and are to a large degree surprising, or at least they were surprising to us. One more than the other. What is not so surprising is the independence of from the momentum of the incoming particles or quasi-particles. The reason is that there's no scale in the wall. So you can think about what this could have depended on, and you will very quickly figure out that there's nothing you can write down which has the correct dimension and has the correct dependence on the momentum. It should depend only on the momentum, on the null momentum towards the interface and not on the other one, and there's nothing you can write. But the independence on the operator that acts on the vacuum to create the state, this is surprising, and it's something that that we believe tells us something about the theory itself. It's a feature of the way we can excite the vacuum with local operators. In particular, it is also subject to an assumption. So this is true if the largest symmetry algebra is Virasoro, and it's modified if there are currents in the theory. And on this, I will comment maybe later. Let me just finish the outline by telling you what this number actually is. Well, the denominator of this number is the central charge of the left and the right CFT. The numerator appears in a correlation function, is the correlation function of the left stress tensor with the right stress tensor in the presence of the interface. When I put a subscript I, it means that it's evaluated in the presence of the interface. This is fixed up to a number by a holomorphy, and this is the number that appears there. Okay, so this is what I would like to prove, or to argue, just catch the proof of the result. But is there any question about this before I detail the setup of the experiment? OK, so if not, then let me be more precise about what we mean by this experiment. So what is the obstacle to overcome? We saw that matter just propagates rigidly, it hits the interface and splits. However, when we act with a local operator on the vacuum, what we create is not something localized. We would like to have a normalizable state. And a normalizable state acts in the vacuum in very complicated ways. And in particular, it's a Euclidean process. It creates energy density everywhere. So when we act, let me just draw a Penrose diagram here for our space with an interface. And when we act with a local operator, say with some wave function in a region of space-time, what we're actually creating here is some bump, some energy, which is non-zero everywhere up to infinity. And this energy then will propagate according to the rules that we said, it will propagate rigidly. But it's not obvious how to tell apart what's being transmitted and what's being reflected, since things are happening all the way. This is the usual fact in conformal field theories, that there are long-range correlations in the vacuum. So the way, one way to detail better what's happening is that, perhaps I have color here, is that there are various things happening in the future and in the past. There is some bump that, as I said, is spread and it depends on the detail of the conformal field theory and of the defect, which is going towards the interface and then splits and is reflected and transmitted and goes off to infinity. And there is another bump which is going in the right, and of course it was coming from minus infinity. And then there is another bump which comes here, and the fact that this exists is just a picture that I drew before. If you now forget about the interface, of course you'll always have this spread of the energy that goes to the right and to the left. And what is the past of this bump? The past of this bump also has its interface, but somehow there was no reflection here. So what has happened is that there was some very entangled pair coming in. It's the interface in such a way that the only output is the bump to the left. And this guy also goes to infinity. Now, we would like to measure something that happens here. This is the good region, so we only care about this incoming energy and these outgoing energies. But we have also this in the way, and we need to subtract it away.
Sorry, can you explain again why it doesn't go, the orange
thing
doesn't go to the future?
Yes. The reason is that if I now look at the constant time slice here, I can just know what is the energy density here because it's measured by a three-point function, right? Let's say I created this state acting with a local operator on the vacuum at some time t equals zero, and then I'm measuring the energy density. This object, and here I'm drawing what happens as a function of z and z bar. But we know how this looks like. At t equals zero, this is just a Euclidean correlation function. It's in the presence of an interface, but at large space like separation, it drops. So the picture here is more or less what I drew before. We have some line here, the energy density, an impurity, and there will be some energy here. It will be discontinuous maybe at the location of the interface. You can even you can do exercises and make it negative here. Many, many weird things can happen. And then there's a bump, more or less at the location of when I hit with the operator, and then it goes down. But since there is a usual power law decay, on the right-hand side there's nothing. So you actually know what's the situation at t equals zero, you're just trying to figure out what creates that situation. Okay? Good, so what is the way in which we measure the energy transmitted and reflected? We do this in an inclusive way. Again, we don't want to talk about amplitudes. I can comment about amplitudes if somebody is interested later, but the safe thing to do in a CFT is to measure inclusive quantities. And the correct inclusive quantity is just the Enoch operator, which in 2D is the total energy. So there will be an integral of the stress tensor from minus infinity to plus infinity. I should put perhaps 1 over 2 pi, which is the usual convention. This operator is the operator that measures energy across the which is moving towards the right. Remember that in this picture, z is going here and z bar is here. So if I integrate this operator along z here, say, so epsilon, say, right, integrate it here, this is picking up the energy that goes through. And there would be, of course, an epsilon bar left, which is the stress tensor, the anti-holomorphic stress tensor integrated here, that picks up the energy that goes to the future, and an epsilon left, which picks up the energy that comes from the past. So intuitively, what you want to do is to create the state and measure in the state these quantities in order to reproduce the reflected and transmitted energy. And then we hit the problem that we were discussing. So there is, if I just measure the expectation value of this operator, I will be summing up the energy that I want and the energy I don't want. And similarly here, the only one which is safe is this guy here. So the way in which we, well, this is almost safe. There is still the problem that there is not really a process happening here. The process is happening all the way because this, this state is getting energy density also away from, I mean, close to the interface at t equals zero. The way we solve this problem is to take a limit. We describe a one-parameter family of states in which we're bringing this object very far away. What happens when we bring the object, when we act on the vacuum very far away from the interface, what happens is that the state at time equals zero that I was drawing looks more and more similar to the one without the interface. This is just an OPD argument. And therefore, this bump, this orange bump, can be estimated without the interface. It's just the same as it would be if the interface wasn't there. It's just something that propagates away and never hits the interface. So this energy that we don't want, we can just subtract it away by computing it in the translational invariant theory. Therefore, and OK, at the same time, this yes, at the same time, this energy that we want to measure as incoming energy can be just estimated again without the interface. Because again, I'm going very far away from the interface, so this bump looks exactly like it would look if there was no interface here. So then, perfect, we can just write down the observable and then clarify the result. So our transmission coefficient is going to be, let me just first say what is the family of states. So I will create, I will choose some local operator, say in the left CFT, independence of a coefficient, and then I will create, choose this local operator as, say, acting, let me just write the simplest possible option, at some reference point with a shift on the vacuum in the presence of the defect. So this parameter d parameterizes the distance along this direction of my wave function. And then I can just define the transmission coefficient, say, from the left as the expectation value of OLFD in this state OLFD of epsilon right divided by the incident energy, which, while this is measured in the presence of the interface, the incident energy will be measured in the absence of the interface. And similarly, for the reflection coefficient, I will measure this state, epsilon bar, right? But now we'll need to subtract, because as we discussed, there's stuff I don't want at infinity in this state. Minus, and then I just estimate this red bump without the interface. So I measure again the expectation value of the state, of the same operator in the state, but now I will not put the eyes anymore. Thanks. Okay. And then I divide by the same thing, actually. Let me just steal the incident energy. Okay, so this defines nice observables, and then I will like, of course, this depends on t, on this parameter d, my reflection and transmission coefficient are going to be the limit. Both here and here. Good. So these are our observables, and they still look complicated. So now I can just spend the last 10 minutes explaining how the result simplifies. So you see, what is going on here is that we devise a procedure to disentangle the complication associated to the fact that when we hit on the vacuum with an interface, there's energy everywhere. And in doing so, we still end up with a quantity which is a three-point function, right? I'm acting with an operator here, and I'm measuring a third operator. So this is a three-point function in the presence of, of an interface, and in a conformal field theory, this is a complicated object. This object actually depends on two cross ratios. So, okay, while this definition is usable in principle, it's just on the nose, it turns out in some integral over some function, which we don't know. And in general, depends on the state, depends on which local operator I decide to act on the vacuum with. So the way in which this is solved and simplifies is just the statement that the complication of this three-point function does not depend on something that happens locally at the interface. It's not a complication of how energy created by different states bounces off the interface. It's a feature of the complication of the initial state. It's a feature of the complication of a state in, say, Euclidean setup, which is the thing that I drew already many times, of what happens here. This is something complicated, and the effect of this is that this three-point function is complicated. Once I take the limit in which this bump is going far away, this state becomes less complicated, and the three-point function will become less complicated. So we isolate what happens at the interface. What happens at the interface will be very simple. So let me just say quickly how it goes, and then pass through some comments and the conclusion. So how it goes is the following. So the core object that we're considering is a three-point function. And let me just point out that these definitions make sense, and one way in which we see they make sense is that they sum up to one, as they should. Okay, this plus this gives one. Just from the gluing condition, I don't have to do any computation. Therefore, I just take the luxury of isolating TL. I will just compute the transmission coefficient from now on. So the object is this object. This object depends on some function of two cross ratios, which I'm calling C and U, and some prefactor that we don't really care. The only thing you should care about is that, I mean, there are two things you should care about. One thing is that if the interface is not there, so no interface, the prefactor is chosen so that F is equal to, if these are quasi-primaries, which I'm going to restrict to now, even if it's not necessary for the proof, it's just equal to the holomorphic dimension. This just becomes the usual three-point function. And so it's a constant. And the other thing you should care about is that xi, what are the cross ratios xi? The cross ratio xi is basically a proxy for d. It goes like 1 over d, the distance at which I'm acting with the local operator. The cross ratio u is just a proxy for the position of the stress tensor z. So let me draw one more diagram. We have the two local operators somewhere in space, position z1 and z2. And then this is the interface. And then we're integrating the stress tensor, say, on some line this way. There are two special points in this contour of integration, which are the points at which the stress tensor meets the light rays exiting from the two local operators. This is never a singularity because the state is normalizable. So since there is an I epsilon prescription going on here, what you should really think of is that this contour passes below one of the light rays and above the other one. So this is the way the contour of integration goes. This z is the one that is being integrated in this definition. And I want to emphasize that these singularities are not of the OPE type. These are some Landau singularities. You have to go through the interface, so these are not fixed by any OPE of the stress tensor with the operator on the right-hand side. In general, they're not poles. You compute examples, you'll find there are cuts at some fixed value of xi. So the contour, as I was saying, in u is like the position of z. And okay, the picture we have is that there are two special points, say u equal 1 and u equal infinity, and some cut that joins the points, and the contour in z becomes some line here. And the important thing to notice here is that I'm not staying on only one sheet. I should draw it probably in a different way. Yeah. Okay. So the contour starts, say, on the first sheet, but ends on the second, and we would like to measure the whole integral. And this is the complicated part. So let's just sketch how it goes. How it goes is the following. There is a region in this contour in which the OPE between the two operators here converges. And this region can be thought of as all the place in which the stress tensor is put as some space-like separation from the two operators. In this case, one can be a bit more precise and draw a regional convergence of the OPE in the U-plane, which is some region, say, here. So here the OPE converges. And here we can use it. So when we use the OPE, we're going to say that OLF times OLF has a bunch of exchange operators with some H and H bar. It turns out that doing the computation, that when you take the limit d going to infinity, lowest twist exchange operators survive. So this limit turns into a Lightcon limit for the local operators. So there are some selection rules here. So some operators are going to be suppressed in this limit. So this means in the notation I'm using, h bar equals 0. And there are still infinitely many operators in the 2D CFT which have h bar equals 0. But there's a further simplification in the limit again. Well, actually, the further simplification is for any of these exchanges, which is that for an operator to have a non-zero two-point function for an operator on the left, have a non-zero two-point function with a stress tensor on the right, the operator has to have h spin 2, h minus h bar equal 2, even if there is an interface. This is a simple to see through a conformal transformation. It is just a true statement. So therefore, since, OK, I'm taking the OPE of this operator here, and then I end up with two-point function with a stress tensor, the subsector of these two conditions is that only operators with holomorphic dimension 2 and anti-holomorphic dimension 0 contribute. And here goes the assumption that I was saying at the beginning. If the largest symmetry algebra is Virasoro, this is just the stress tensor of the left theory. So in the limit, all the complication of the correlation function is destroyed by this by the OPE. And of course, we're hiding a fact. We're using the OPE in the region where it converges, but the integral goes through a region where the OPE does not converge. However, correlation functions are analytic because I chose normalizable states here. There is an I epsilon that protects me. In both cases, epsilon can be finite throughout the computation. So therefore, what we proved is that, okay, there's one more thing I need to tell you, maybe. So if there is only one block, only the stress tensor contributing, this is the same operator that would contribute if the interface wasn't there, right? If I did not have an interface, only the stress tensor in the OPE of this two operator would contribute to the two-point function. So therefore, as I wrote there before, f of xi, when xi is 0, so when I go to the d equal infinity limit and u, is just a constant, which is exactly what it was in the absence of the interface. And this is valid in principle in u belonging to the yes region, but it's an analytic function, and if an analytic function is a constant everywhere. So therefore, what we just found is that although the original correlation function was a complicated object, the limit is destroying all of the complication, and we end up with a three-point function, which is just a constant. This constant, let me just restrict to the case. I can comment if somebody's interested in the case in which there's more operators that contribute here. This constant is just going to be the two-point function of the stress sensor on the left, which is this guy, and the stress sensor on the right. And therefore, we obtain the result advertised, which is this, where C left right was the two-point function between the And again, I would like to emphasize that all the complications associated to choosing a specific operator here, they're all gone. There's no remnant of which operator I chose. So there's no way to have matter that propagates and bounces off the interface differently depending on which way I excite the vacuum, which is not what we usually think it happens. At least it's not what happens in a generic quantum field theory. Okay, so let me comment and conclude. So there is one. There is essentially one comment. Well, there are two comments that I would like to make before concluding. How much time do I have? 10 minutes. Okay. Yeah, maybe I can even say something more. So the first comment I would like to make is that we should expect T left to be positive and T right to be positive, both of them. And therefore, but they both depend only on one unique coefficient, actually positive, but also even more interestingly, less than one, both of them. Although they depend only on one coefficient, if you measure, let me write it here, you write the result that you find would be the same up to the denominator. And therefore, this turns into more stringent bounds. So T left is less or equal than the minimum between 1 and C right over C left. And T right is less or equal to the minimum in 1 and C left over C right. This is reassuring. It tells us something interesting about conformal interfaces. It tells us that we cannot ever transmit completely, have completely transparent interfaces from a theory with bigger central charge to a theory with lower central charge. If I send matter, if the central charge on the left is bigger and I send some energy from the left, part of it will be reflected. And the same thing happens. On the other hand, if I send matter from the right, from a theory with lower central charge to a theory with bigger central charge, I can transmit it completely. Another fact that I would like to comment about is the relation to the displacement operator, which has been mentioned at various points during the conference. So the displacement operator is a Euclidean object. It's something that tells you what's the cost in free energy in displacing the interface. And what this result is secretly telling us is that it also dominates the dynamics. It's not hard to see that the two-point function of the displacement operator, which Lorenzo was calling CD, well, you can think about as B if you wish, is just a combination of the reflection coefficients probably normalized. Actually, no, the usual normalization, there's no normalization here. Yeah. So this is a nice relation. This is a relationship between the dynamics, so this is all Lorentzian, and the statistical mechanics of two-dimensional conformal field theories. And it also, thanks to this bound, set a bound to the value of the displacement operator, which can be as big as the sum over the central charges, but it cannot be smaller than the absolute value of the differences. And one thing that should be noticed is that this bound, in particular the lower bound, is stronger than the Euclidean unitarity bounds that were proven before for the displacement operator. So this is one of the instances in which Lorentzian kinematics is setting stronger bounds on some quantity than the Euclidean counterpart. We're kind of used by now to these facts. Although Euclidean conformal field theories are the same, or quantum field theories for one matter are the same as conformal field theories, the constraints due to unitarity are encoded in the Euclidean setup in a way which is very often far more involved and difficult to extract, while Lorentzian kinematics sort of exhibits new features. Okay, so these were the most important comments, I think, about it. I think I have about 5 minutes, probably. So I can let me just mention two things that go, one in the comments and the other in the Outlook. Okay, so in the comments, I would like to say a few things. Okay, so one thing is that, okay, we have a few checks that this works. because there are a few assumptions hidden in the derivation, which I didn't have time to emphasize. In particular, well, you can ask me about if you're interested. You should complain about many things. You should complain about the fact that I gave you a limit of a correlation function, and then I told you that I want to integrate this to get a total energy. It's not guaranteed that you can commute limits and integrals. Although this is physically motivated, and I can make that explicit, it was still worth to do some checks in explicit conformal field theories, both in free and interacting examples, and see that it works. The other comment I would like to make is the case of extended symmetries. When there are extended symmetries, you might expect this picture to be wrong. The reason is that what I'm telling you is that the theory doesn't have a way to distinguish what is sent against an interface. But if I have extended symmetries, if I have a charge, then I have currents. Then I have quantum numbers, right? I can distinguish operators according to their charge. So I should expect to be able to distinguish what I send against the wall. And this indeed happens. The way in which it happens is through the failure of one assumption I had. So there are more operators which have weight 2,0 if there is a spin 1 current, which are basically the coset stress tensors. And the formula can be easily modified in order to account for that, so that now the transmission and reflection coefficient does depend on the charge of the operator that is sent against the interface through the contribution of these operators. This allows me also to say one more thing, which is that reflection and transmission coefficients were already in the literature as a proposal, and they were just motivated by the fact, in a beautiful paper by Quella, Runkel and Watts, the motivation being having some quantity that is zero for topological interfaces, one for boundaries, and sums up to one everywhere. So this reduces to this average. This is what Quella, Runkel and Watts would call up to a normalization R. So we see two features. One feature is that, okay, now we have bounds for reflection and transmission as defined by them. We clarified what is being transmitted and what is being reflected. And we have a more sophisticated definition that in all cases where there are extended symmetries encompasses this one, but is more specific. It can tell you something far more detailed about what is the dynamics of the theory through this coupling of the other stress tensors. And finally, let me go to the outlook and conclude. So my conclusion is going to be an advertisement of some work in progress with Lorenzo, who is here. There are many questions you can ask about this setup. One question is, what about what happens in experiment by experiment, right? If I do the experiment 30 times, how does the reflection and transmission coefficient change? And this involves computing higher moments of this correlator. So that's one thing. It's not what we're doing with Lorenzo. What we're doing with Lorenzo is the other question that should arise automatically, which is, what about higher dimensions? So in higher dimensions, there are conformal interfaces, of course. And you would like to describe the situation similarly. Although it may look like I used a lot of intuition from 2D, in particular I used holomorphy a lot, this is actually I need only mild instruments. And what is going to happen in higher dimension is the following. We are going to measure, so we're going to have a conformal interface, and we're going to measure the energy which is transmitted, the total energy which is transmitted. So instead of measuring at infinity at one angle, which is a very detailed and very hard problem in general, we're going to measure just how much energy passes through. And how much energy passes through is measured by topological operators in the CFT, which are just the integral of the stress tensor in the p direction, say. And since they are topological, we can still smash them against the interface. And we can create the same experiment as before. We have a bump, and it goes through. The outcome of this analysis is that also in higher dimension, the same qualitative features happen. The transmission coefficient is a number, and is fixed by a piece of defect CFT data, like the displacement. Except now it doesn't look like being the displacement. It looks like being related to the limit of the stress tensor on the interface. And this component of the stress tensor on the interface is a very specific protected local operator, which I'm calling VT, say. It's a vector on the interface, and it has dimension D. So this exists for any conformal interface, more or less like the displacement operator, even if it has received less attention throughout the literature. It also has a two-point function, let me call it CV, which is a feature of the interface. And the statement is, again, that the transmission coefficient is a ratio of this two-point function to the central charge of the theory, which gives us some interesting questions with which I will conclude, which are, is this related at all with the displacement operator in higher D? Is it just bounded by it? And second, there is a bound which automatically follows from this proposal, which is that this quantity should be smaller or equal than the central charge, while now the central charge is defined more loosely as the two-point function of the stress tensor away from the interface. This is, again, completely non-obvious from the Euclidean point of view. So it would be nice to check it in examples. And third, the central charge still plays a role. We're used to counting degrees of freedom with other things rather than the central charge, but here it looks like, again, you cannot transmit energy completely from a theory which has larger CT to a theory which has smaller CT, rather than other ways of counting degrees of freedom, which are maybe more refined, like the A anomaly. And with this, and by asking if there are questions, I will conclude. Thank you.
So I have one question. You know what happens to the transmission
It's an interesting question. No, it's not obvious. In 2D, okay. In general, it's not obvious because. Of course, there are some situations in which it's obvious. If I do a conformal transformation which just displaces the interface and turns into a sphere, that is a conformal transformation. It's not really a shape deformation. And therefore, although the setup looks very strange. So what's happening is that since I'm in Lorentzian signature, this kind of conformal transformation will just turn the interface into an hyperbola. And therefore, the setup will be similar, and the reflection and transmission will be the same in that case. A true shape deformation is something more interesting, and I would be surprised if there was a high degree of universality in the result, because then what it looks like is the following. Let's say we do a small shape deformation here, and now we want to measure the same thing. So what's going to happen is that on this side, everything is going to be very similar. So I take my two operators, I send them far away, and then I isolate the contribution of the stress tensor. But now the shape deformation is approximated by inserting the displacement operator. So what is happening is that I will be dealing now still with a three-point function, at least. A three-point function of the stress sensor on the left, the stress sensor on the right, and the displacement operator in the middle. And I believe that is not completely fixed by symmetry, even if... probably actually, so this three-point function, you can bring everything. So since the stress sensor are holomorphic, you can just go to the interface, so you get a three-point function on the interface. That's going to be zero because of parity. So the leading contribution will be order square in the deformation. It will be the four-point function of the stress tensor with the interface. Then you should use word identities and see if you can get it down to two-point function. This is slightly more complicated because there are boundary contributions. So I expect the four-point function to be generally new. Actually, in the Wilson line case, for instance, it is generally new. Here, there is more symmetry, but still, I would think that experiment is sensitive to the degrees of freedom of the defect far more than this one.
Quick question. It's not,